Welcome back to the Fifth Quarter Footy Podcast. My name's Luke, and we are back after a little bit of a hiatus. We weren't expecting to be gone for as long as we were, but we're back ready to go. Season previews again. Today, we're focusing on two pretty interesting teams. One's got a fantastic fan base who will always be faithful to themselves, and that's the Essendon Bombers. And then the second team is a team who could potentially be a bit of a contender this year. They certainly surprised a few in 2022, and that was the Freo Dockers. Today, we have Dieter talking through the Dons. Obviously, I'll have my input too, but Dieter will be running us through that. I will be going through the Fremantle preview. A few things we'll focus on. If you've listened to the previous episodes, you will know. We're going to look at each team's ins and outs, a general prediction of where they will finish, where the clubs should aim to finish come the end of the season, a player to take the next step, and then a player under pressure. Dieter, how's it going?
Yeah, it's going well. Really excited to be back here. Essendon and Freo are very interesting clubs to be looking at because they look to be at different ends of the spectrum, and it's always fascinating sort of comparing and contrasting clubs like that. So it's really exciting for us to be looking at those teams. So I'll get straight into it. What do you think?
Yeah, let's go for it.
So for Essendon, they didn't have much going out over the off season. I actually looked at probably Aaron Francis as the biggest out for them. And the reason why I picked him was he was pick number six in 2015. So that equates to seven seasons in the system. And for pick six, he's only played 54 games in seven seasons, which is around seven or eight games a year, which is pretty poor return for Essendon that invested a lot with the pick six. And if you look back in the 2015 draft, there was Harry Mackay and Charlie Curnow. And if you're looking at a player that Essendon needs, they need a big centre-half forward or full forward out of those two. And that was a real miss for them in hindsight. But a major in, I thought, was Sam Wiedemann from Melbourne. I think that was a great trade by them. They didn't give up a lot of draft capital. And I think that helps restructure them by having a tall centre-half forward, but also helps with a bit of ruck relief for Draper. So I think that was a great trade by them. And then having an early draft pick as well in the 2022 draft, Elijah Sardis is a great get by them because he's a taller, bigger body midfield and just has that scope to really improve their list over the future. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with Francis. He's a player who just never seemed to get it going. He got tried at both ends of the ground. When you look at it in the sense that you said Mackay and Curnow got taken after him, as a Carlton fan, that makes me very happy. But just from a neutral point of view, though, it's a huge miss for the Bombers. But then that being said, they have brought in then that centre-half forward that they can look towards utilising in the future in Sam Wiedemann. That he, I think, is a great get for him. I kind of agree. He's a guy who has at times been a bit starved of opportunity, but then also never really taken it when he's had the chance either. So it can come down to both himself and the Demons in that sense. However, I think at the Bombers, I don't think he's going to have an issue getting games. Him and Tumina Peter will make a good little duo for him, or big duo, I should say. They're both two bloody tall blokes. But yeah, I think that's a great get. Sardis, yeah, it speaks for itself. High draft pick. He's probably something that Essendon lack. You know, they've had a lot of criticism in the fact that their midfielders are all pretty much the same player. Smaller guys who are just outside runners. They've copped a lot of flack about that over the last few seasons. So bringing in a young guy like Sardis, I know he's a little bit injured, miss a bit of the season, but I think long term, I like that pick for them. And I just think overall, looking at the ins and outs, I'd say they've had a good win over the off season.
Yeah, I think I think that's a great point. Their losses weren't bad, but their ins were better, and probably players that they needed to fill list roles for their best 22, so it looks good for them. In terms of prediction, they were off last year, which was interesting, so we don't know really where they're going to sit in the new season. I personally have them in the middle of the bottom 10, if that makes sense. So I'm expecting them to be around 14th, 15th spot. There's teams above them that are fighting for the top 8, and there's teams below them that just don't have the list that Essendon have. So they'll fit somewhere in the middle of the pack of that bottom 10 side. And I think in terms of aims for the club, they should be really trying to get in reach of the top 8. I don't think they're going to knock out any club from, you know, 1st to 10th on the ladder. But I think they should be really trying to claw back towards the upper echelons of the bottom 10. And just to play more consistent footy, you'd see them play one or two good quarters and then fade out or not even turn up some days. So I think just be more consistent. What are your thoughts, Luke?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've spoken about it a lot, and you just mentioned it. The top 10, I think there's a clear top 10 in the league going into 2023, at least what it looks like in the off season. However, Essendon, for me, I think they're probably going to be one of, if not the best team outside of that top 10. I think them and Gold Coast are going to be maybe fighting for that 11th spot. And the reason I say that is because Essendon did catch us off guard in 2021 when they had a great run and they played finals footy. Obviously, it didn't go well for them, but they had a fantastic year. And a lot of people pre-season last year had them pinned as a potential top four team. Now, that obviously went quite the opposite way. I'd say Collingwood ended up taking their spot and they ended up taking Collingwood's spot. They just sort of reversed themselves on the ladders. However, I just think I look at their list and I don't love their list, but I think they're a lot better than a lot of those other teams in that bottom sort of 8. And they're a team who will get wins against teams they probably don't deserve to beat. That being said, they probably will drop games that they shouldn't. They're just a funny mix of players, and I think they'll be sort of that 12th area on the ladder, bit of a no man's land position. But in terms of the aim, the club, I mean, I guess you aim for top 8, but I don't know if that's really what is realistic.
Yeah, I think we're looking for definitely sort of realistic aims for them. And there's, for a new coach in, I think it's Brad Scott, you really should be just trying to consolidate a game plan and getting the players really invested in that. And if they, you know, they've brought in Wiedemann, they've brought in Sardis, hopefully they can get quite a few games out of them and build that continuity with those best 22. And hopefully for 2024, they can really launch into a top 8 fight. But I think realistically, like you said, and it's a good point, their list is very strange because they've got some older players, they've got some younger players. So once we've seen a full season with Brad Scott in charge, I think we'll be able to have a bit more certainty for the future for the Bombers. But moving on, I think the player to really take the next step for me is Sam Draper. I think he's been in the system now for long enough to really start imposing himself as a genuine top 5 ruckman. It was fascinating last season winning, I think it was the best goal for the season, where he got the ruck tap, got it to one of his midfielders, sprinted forward, got the receiving, I think, and then somehow kicked the goal from that.
It was like a slower, bulkier version of a Nick Natanui center clearance goal. That's what it looked like to me.
So I think if you've got a player like that at his height and weight, I think, you know, once he's gets a bit fitter and gets that mobility and gets that confidence, I think he's really one to take the next step. And he also came out in preseason saying that he wants to try be as good as Max Gawn. And I think if that's as high as he wants to be, you know, go for it. You know, happy for him to try reach those heights. And so, yeah, I think that he's my player. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think he could fall under both taking the next step and under pressure a little bit. purely because I think it's pretty clear that he's capable of being one of the top five ruckmen, as you said. And if he doesn't really take that next step, well, then Essendon will start sort of scratching their head a little bit. So that being said, I think he's going to be fine. He's an exciting player. He's a bit of a polarizing player. I know some people think he's no good. I think a lot of people think he's great. He still has a long way to go. And I think if the Bombers are going to do well, he needs to have a great season.
Yep.
The outside of him, though, yeah, no one really screams their name out to me other than maybe a Jai Caldwell. I think he could be someone who does well this year.
Archie Perkins.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't even think about Archie Perkins. That's a great shout. And maybe Jordan Ridley can sort of find some form again, hopefully, for them, because he had a down year, and I know he was playing a different role, but there's a few guys who you could probably throw in, but yeah, I think Draper's the one that does stand out to me the most.
Yeah, there's certainly a few young 20-year-old players that have been in the system for two to four or five seasons that could be taking that next step, like we've sort of mentioned before. But in terms of under pressure, this was fascinating and had a lot of fun thinking about it. I sort of put the whole club under pressure, barring Brad Scott, because he's only just arrived into just has been mistake after mistake after mistake for them. And it just, if they can get their board right and their back of house stuff right, then they can start to get their on-field stuff right. Because they had a CEO that was there for 24 hours. They had Ben Rudden, who was their next great coach that they sacked in 18 months. They're just in a bit of disarray, to be honest. So they're certainly under the pump for my eyes. But in terms of players, I've got three that I sort of picked out in no particular order. But number one for me was Darcy Parrish, which is probably a fascinating player to put under the pump for 2023. I just think he was found out last year, and his disposal impact wasn't quite like it was the year before, where we saw in 2022 he might get a lot of cheap 1-2 handballs, and they went backwards in that particular play where they weren't driving the ball forward, and he just almost stacked pad by getting a lot of possession. So I think he really needs to step up as a leader of the Essendon Football Club and perform a bit more on the field. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, interesting. I didn't expect Parrish. I think he's arguably their best player. So that's caught me a little off guard. But I definitely can understand your point. He did get found out last year a few times. And I guess with young guys like Caldwell, Sardis getting drafted, I mean, it does add a little. They could add a little bit of pressure on him, maybe. But I think he's going to be fine. I think there's, you've got a few other names that I can see you've listed. One of them I think is under a lot more pressure than he is. But yeah, it's an interesting take. Yeah. That's for sure.
I think he just wasn't performing at the heights that he could perform.
I think that's fair.
And
enough.
I think that impacted Essendon in the engine room. And you sort of saw when Essendon got destroyed by teams that their midfield was really lacking the defensive run. They were really lacking that stuff that you don't really need to teach. You can tackle, you can block, you can shepherd, get your hands dirty. And you saw that Darcy Parrish sort of reverted to a bit of outside play more than inside play. So I think that's why he's on my board. It's not sort of discounting his ability or anything, but I think now him and Merritt are sort of the staples in the midfield.
Well, I guess it's a good point, I guess, because I guess the midfield has always been under the pump at Essendon, and I guess he's probably the leader of that midfield nowadays. Him or Merritt. Scheel could probably have a case, but I think those are the two that would be considered the leaders of that midfield. So yeah, I can definitely see your point there. It's an interesting take. I don't mind that, actually.
Yeah, so moving on, Dyson Heppel was another player I thought was under pressure. I think it's just fascinating coming into this year, because during the off-season, Gold Coast came to Heppel and offered him a 3 or 4 year contract, and he was a free agent. And I'm going to be honest, I thought he might have taken it to get out of Essendon, get a new lease of life at a new club, just because I just felt like his on field role and job as the captain just wasn't meeting expectations or the needs for Essendon. And any club that sort of goes backwards after being in the top eight, you know, question marks do come for you. And, you know, I'm not sure what role Heppel plays next year, because I don't think he's good enough to be in the midfield with some of the players that we've mentioned before. And, you know, can he play off the halfback like he won an All-Australian a few years ago? Maybe. You know, they picked up a few players in recent years to fill that role. So I don't know. It's sort of maybe career defining, because I think he only signed a 1 year contract extension, so he might be sussing out what's the go at Essendon. But you were probably looking at him yourself as son of the pump, do you think?
I mean, the one that I noticed was the third player on the list. Yeah. That's the one I think that's the big one. But we'll get to him in a second. Heppel, yeah, look, he's definitely probably pushed out of that midfield now. And it's no disrespect to him. I think he's a champion player and he's been huge for Essendon over the last 10 years or so. And I'm a big fan of him and his game. I think he will slot in on the half-back line. I still think he's got a lot to offer on that half-back line. But I can definitely see why you've put him under pressure. He's getting older. He's slowing down. Realistically, he's relying on his footy skills, his ball skills, to keep him going. And as the leader of this club, or one of the leaders of this club, he's going to play a big part in them potentially pushing for a sneaky top eight finish. Or maybe he's going to play a part in them being, you know, in the bottom four if he doesn't have a good year. And there are guys that will come in and put pressure on his spot if he's not performing. He's not that player who's undroppable anymore. So I don't mind that shout. I like Heppel personally, but I could definitely see him being under pressure this year.
Yeah, and probably one thing final to note about Heppel was, a direct reflection of Heppel, but you just noticed that Essendon didn't have a lot of on-field leaders that actually vocalized some sort of support or game plan when they're under the pump. And it was almost that the focal point was at Dyson Heppel to try change something. You know, you look at Merritt and Parrish, they're not the most vocal. And there just didn't seem to be a lot of leaders in Essendon on the field, which is a bit, you know,
it's unfair on Heppel, but I guess that's just how the cookie crumbles sometimes, which is a shame for him.
So that's a bit tough. But moving on, the final player I noted as under the pressure was actually Nick Cox. And it's probably sad to see him in this position, because in his first year, which I think was the COVID bubble in 2020, he had an incredible season. And he was playing off the wing, he was doing a bit forward, a bit back. Now, you know, he's in a bit of no man's land in terms of where he's at this early stage of his career. And he's been under some injury clouds throughout the last few seasons. His form's been hit and miss. And it's obviously tough on any young player getting thrown around by a senior coach. I don't know where Nick Cox's best position is. He can outrun anyone at the club in terms of the running challenges, and he's over 2 meters tall. So, you know, it's a blessing and a curse to have a player like that. What are your thoughts, Luke?
Yeah, Nick Cox is an interesting one. As you said, great first season, then really just underwhelmed since. He's sort of a jack of all trades, master of none kind of player. And I mean, it's amazing just a couple of years later to see that he's a guy who's not a guaranteed best 22 player. I just don't know where he fits properly. I mean, you and I are in a Supercoach keeper league, and I remember after that first season, I was willing to trade some big assets to get him in. And the guy who kept him and said no to me, he's, at the time, I was pretty jealous of him, but then nowadays I'm looking at that trade offer and I'm thinking, thank God he didn't, because he's really turned out to be not a whole lot. And I think along with Nick Cox, there's another player who was drafted with him in that draft in the first round. That was Zach Reed. He's another player who I think really does need to break into the team as a key position player. He hasn't done much in the seniors at all since he's been drafted. He's played here and there. But it's been long enough now of where he should be cementing a spot in the team. It's not like they've got the strongest back line keeping him out. If he is playing down back still, I could be wrong in that. But they're the two picks that I think are looking like they might be a bit of a backfire on the Bombers. Nick Cox, I still think, has a bit more of a chance than Reed, personally. But yeah, it's not looking good for those two at the moment.
I think both being around 2 meters tall, it's definitely tough. That transition from juniors to AFL seniors, and you know they were top of their class for their underage seasons, given that their height, and you can see that they do need to put on a bit more weight and strength. So hopefully they've had a big off seasons themselves. I think Nick Cox is the type of player that you'd want in your club just so he could play at either ends of the field. I know from a Bulldogs perspective, I'd love to have a Nick Cox cement a spot in defense. And, you know, 2 meter players that were drafted in the top five, I think he was, you know, don't grow on trees. So he's got the potential. We're just hoping that Brad Scott can settle him down and just tell him, okay, you're going to be playing in X position from now on into the future. So he just gets a bit more confidence, really, because if you'd be changing your mindset every week if you're playing down, forward or up back every different week. So that's all for Essendon. We hope you've enjoyed that. We're moving on to Frio. Do you want to take it away, Luke?
Yeah. So yeah, I think that was a great chat about the Bombers. I think short and sweet. I think we touched on the key points, and that's good. Moving on to the Dockers, opposite ends of the table, I think, coming out of 22, and I think it'll probably be similar in 2023. Looking at their ins, they've guys with AFL experience of note is Luke Jackson, Jaeger O'Meara, and Josh Corbett. They did draft Corey Wagner, who was formerly on the Demons list as well, but the main two, I would say, are Luke Jackson and O'Meara. Luke Jackson speaks for himself. Very hyped young player. He's had a great couple of years at Melbourne, won a flag, has been a real standout in a premiership team. And at his age and his size, he's a player who he could really take the league by storm. And so I think regardless of what you would give up for him and what you lose, that's a huge in regardless. Jaeger O'Meara, I really like this get. They didn't give up much for him at all. He's sort of a like-for-like for Mundy, who retired. However, I think he isn't quite as good as Mundy was. That being said, he's going to play a big role in that midfield. If Fife doesn't really get back to being fit enough but his body doesn't get healthy enough to play full-time midfield, having a guy like O'Meara come into the club, being able to play there as a bit of a bigger body around what is a really exciting young midfield with some smaller guys, O'Meara could be a really, really good get just to sort of look after those younger bodies. So I really like that. Those two ins. What do you think about those ins?
Yeah, I think they're great. I think O'Meara is an incredible get for them. And like you touched upon, he takes Mundy's spot. But I think when you've got O'Meara in as that big body midfielder, you can just rest five forward. And I think with O'Meara and Will Brody as those inside bulls, Caleb Sarong and Andy Brayshaw can just have that mix of inside out, so they don't have to batter themselves consistently, but we know that their ability, they can go get their own ball. But O'Meara, he's a bit one-dimensional in the sense that there's no other position for him outside of pure midfield, which is fine. You do need those players. You know, Bulldogs absolutely have Libba. He just hunts the ball so well, and he's just fierce in the contest. I think it's a great get, and I think that'll really help them allow to spread that midfield load. And, you know, if Fife is playing forward, he doesn't need to go in the midfield if Jaeger O'Meara is playing. So I think that's a great get. And Luke Jackson, you know, he's going to be there for the rest of his career, so you give up whatever draft capital you need for him. Obviously, it was a big hit to them in the short term, but I think long term, him and Sean Darcy will just go so well together.
Yeah, I like that point, absolutely. It's interesting, though, with the Dockers. Those are two pretty big ins, I think, and I think both of them will add a lot to that team. But when I look at their outs, they've lost a lot of AFL experience, and it's going to be interesting to see how they handle this going into next season. They've gotten rid of Blake Akers, Rory Lobb, Griffin Logue, Lloyd Meek. They're all traded to other clubs, and they're the sort of main guys that have been traded out of the team. Then they've also lost Darcy Tucker, Connor Blakely, Mitch Croden, David Mundy, who's retired, and Joel Weston, who's out of all that. Joel Weston's really the only one who hasn't had much of an impact at AFL level. Even Blakely and Mitch Croden have had some pretty decent years at
50 games or something.
They've had some pretty decent games. And Blakely's at the Suns still. Croden, did Croden get picked up? I don't know if he did. He got
delisted.
But it wouldn't surprise me if he was someone who got picked up in, you know, a mid-season draft. He's that kind of player. So it's looking at those outs, it's pretty significant. I mean, they lose a winger in Akers. I think that's all right because they've got guys like O'Driscoll who could go and play there and just learn the craft a little bit more. But even then, a bit of a loss. Darcy Tucker was that backup wingman who now they've lost as well. Connor Blakely was a guy who could play on the wing who's gone. So that's interesting to see. And then obviously Rory Lobb being out, I think this
hurts.
I think that hurts this year because he was their... I mean, Tabernet is their number one guy going forward, but he was such a key part of that forward structure. And Luke Jackson, although he will play that role, I think as a pure forward, I would still take Rory Lobb right now over Luke Jackson. And realistically, a big part of Luke Jackson's game is going to have to be learning that forward craft and kicking a goal or two a game to be,
replace Lobb.
Yeah, to be playing in that role effectively. That being said, I think Luke Jackson will get there. I don't know if it'll be this year, but he will get there. But then Lloyd Meek, another depth player in the ruck department. I think it was only a matter of time before he left. He was too good to not be playing regular footy. I think he's a great get for the Hawks. And then Griffin Logue, you know, he was sort of a swingman for him last season, in and out of the team. I don't personally think he's a big loss, but you know, as a guy who could come in and sort of fix a hole where one appeared. You know, he was handy, and it's a lot of AFL experience they've lost. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I didn't realise how many players there were gone, and a bit of an exodus, to be honest. I think that really hurts them this year because you sort of touch upon some of those later names, and there were role players that came in and filled a spot. But you look at Blake Akers, he had his career best year off the wing. Rory Lobb, probably most goals in a season. Griffin Logue played regular games. And then Lloyd Meek was just the backup ruckman any club would want because he was physically ready, physically fit enough to play AFL. I think this year in the off-season, they probably lost, to be honest, given that they traded a few first-round picks for Luke Jackson. They've lost Rory Lobb, who kicked them X amount of goals. I think their depth will be tested, even with the additions that they've got. And you can see that a Luke Jackson and a Josh Corbett are going to try replace the goals that Lobb did kick in 2022, which is fine. But we'll see, you know, 22 games a year is a lot for any club. And having those depth players like your Meeks, like your Darcy Tuckers, you do need those between your 23rd player to your 28th, that's a big loss for them.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. I think they've probably just lost this offseason. I think all the moves, it's very much a long-term vision that these moves are showing, and I think that's a smart decision from the Dockers. I think they've got pretty young stars coming through their list, and I think if they rush it, they could ruin it. So I think the fact that they're putting things in place for the years to come, I like. That being said, it could impact them negatively this season. Looking at the general prediction, I've got them finishing in the range of 3rd to 6th still. I could maybe see them dropping to 7 or 8. Again, depends how they go with an injury run and whatnot, because we don't know how that depth will get tested. 3rd to 6th is the, sort of the range, though, I think they will land. I still think with those outs, they're one of the better teams in the league. I don't see them losing too many games at home this season. And I think that the, as a club, they should be aiming for top four again. Maybe they want to aim for a minor premiership. That's absolutely fine. I wouldn't blame them for that. But I think top four is a pretty reasonable aim that the club should be going for.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. They'll obviously have a harder draw, so that'll be interesting for them to play some of the tougher teams in the top eight twice this season, where they had a bit more of a favourable draw in 2022. But I think your predictions are bang on. I think they'll be finishing high in the top eight, so I think that's all good.
Yeah, well, that's easy enough. In terms of the individual players, I've got a couple names that I thought of when I was looking at players who might take the next step, purely because they are such a young side. But the name I kept coming back to was Hayden Young. I think that wouldn't surprise many off the half-back line. I think second half of last season, he really showed just how good he's going to be for the Dockers. He's going to be a weapon off half-back, a beautiful user of the ball. And he's a guy who, if he gets his game right, he can really become a great interceptor as well. He seems to be good above his head. He's a fantastic size, brilliant kick, and him paired with guys like Heath Chapman and Brandon Walker being sort of the interceptor rebounders of the team, I think those three, any one of them or all three of them, could be some really big improvers, and they could really take their game to the next level.
Yeah, love the Hayden Young pick. I think he probably would have been my player to take the next step. I think, yeah, one of the best kicks in the game, best decision makers, and can also play good defense as well, taking intercept marks and spoils. So I think he's going to be a key part in their premiership drive for this season.
Yeah, and then in terms of players under pressure, it could have been very easy to say Luke Jackson, but I don't think that's quite fair. I think he's going to come under the category of pressure purely because of the contract and the sacrifice. But I think giving him that label in his first season would be a bit unjust. You could look at, again, a Yeager O'Meara coming in, bit of a competition in that Freo midfield, but I don't think he's going to be under too much pressure. The one I'm looking at is Matt Tabana. I'm a big fan of Tabana. I think he's been a great forward for the Dockers. However, his biggest issue is just been consistency over a really long period of time. He's never really put a full season of quality football together. It's not to say that he's not a quality player, but an injury will pop up, or then he will have a down patch. And I think with losing Lobb, this season there is going to be added pressure on him. Nat Fyfe will probably play forward, but we can't expect Fyfe to be kicking 2-3 goals a game, because it's not that he's not capable of that, but he's not a guy who's been brought into that team to kick goals as a key forward. So Tabana really is going to be bearing the load going forward. He's going to be the number one target, you'd assume. I think he's someone who, yeah, will feel the pressure, and hopefully I think he's a player capable of rising above that pressure too, I just want to add. So yeah, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think Tabana is a player that I'd put under pressure as well. It feels like he's been in the league for a few years, but then you look at his age and he's like 30, and that's probably because he always has 10, 12 games a season where he's actually not playing. So you don't get that exposure, and particularly being a Freo player, you're not playing in Melbourne too often, so you don't really see him, but he always gets to pick up some sort of niggle or two. And when he doesn't have a niggle, he sort of kicks 5 goals. So Freo are really sweating on his fitness, I reckon, this coming season. If they can get 18 games in the regular season plus 5, whatever games they play in the final, I think that'll be a win for them. But I think he'll be under pressure. I think he just hasn't reached that potential that he is capable of. But someone else I would like to see, and I'm not sure if he's on your list, but Sam Sturt is under pressure for me.
Yeah, that's a good name, yeah.
He was a first round draft pick or a top 20 draft pick in his draft year and had a great first season, and then I have not heard of him since. And
yeah.
He's had a few injuries. Have you been following him at all?
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's right. I remember first season he came in and was really impressive. And then I think it was just a series of injury after injury. And you're right, I don't think he's played a game since that sort of hot run that he had straight out of the gate. So, it's an interesting point. I think at Frio, there's definitely spots available if guys put their hands up. And someone like Sam Sturt, there's no reason for him not to put pressure on if he's playing well enough. You know, someone like Michael Frederick, who's exciting, he's someone who can be replaced in the best 22. I don't see why not. Like Sam Switkowski, I'm a big fan of. But again, he's someone who, if he drops in form, Sam Sturt could come in for him if he's playing well. So it's a good point you make, absolutely.
Yeah, I think, we're just hoping that he has a good year, to be honest, and a good run of no injuries, because you sort of see these top 20 draft picks, if they've had 4 or 5 years in the competition and they don't put it all together, unfortunately, the AFL system is quite cruel and they get the axe, which you look at players when they get into their peak of their powers is the mid-20s for most of them. So we're just hoping that Sam Sturt can reach his potential. But yeah, he's certainly one to put under the pressure bar.
Yeah, well, I think that'll wrap up the Dockers, I think, overall, personally, unless you've got more to say. Two really interesting teams we've discussed. The Bombers, obviously, massive fan base. We don't really know what kind of team we're going to see this year. Probably not looking at finals. And then we've got Frio, who, they really could be anything. It wouldn't be surprising if they end up becoming a minor premier contender if they get things right. But, two very interesting watches. I think I'm going to say that for most teams this season. But overall, I think that'll do for this episode. If you want to share your thoughts and opinions, please get in contact with us on Twitter. We'll leave the link in the description of this episode. You'll also see that in the description, attached to this episode, if you are on Spotify, there are some questions that you can answer. There's some multiple choice and then there's some written questions. If you'd want to give us some feedback on those questions, that would be great. Otherwise, I think that'll do for this episode. We'll be back talking about the next two clubs very shortly.
Yep, we'll see you then.